You can blame all the rest of the feelings of the entire day on that. And it probably will be the truth.
This will be tape number 3 on May the 2nd, 1995.
EJ, we didn't want to hear that.
Gene is here.
We want some reports. But what I think I'm going to comment on first is the questions that are flowing around in everybody's mind. Well, I just would like a little confirmation because I'm pretty sure I know who I am. If you're pretty sure you know who you are, you know. And it won't feel right. Whatever you're doing will not feel right until you understand that that is a separate entity or aspect of whatever is experiencing them. It's only a tool. As I've said before, it doesn't matter a whit anywhere what you were. It is what you are that makes the difference. Because the only real time that you have and the only real space that you have is the moment. And already, the moment you've spoken it, it's gone into memory. Becomes memory. So sometimes pulling up the last moment is harder than pulling in to millennia. And if you are concerned about who you might be, if it matters to you, and it's a curiosity, always know that it's curiosity. And the interesting thing is, you can go to one fortune teller after another, one psychic after another, and maybe a psychic will be correct and you'll say, aha, that's right. But most of the time, you're going to go and they're going to tell you you were King Tut. And you weren't, and you know it. And so you discount that psychic a little bit, or maybe you'll consider, well, I believe, though, that I was something back there at that time. So if you want to realize the overall universal consciousness, you have to understand several things. If you can't work it out in your reasoning and understanding, at least assume that you can comprehend the idea, the concept of light, manifestation, energy focus, etc., thought form, whatever you want to call it. If you can conceive of a higher source, which I don't see how anyone could not, something brought order out of a totally chaotic environment. And if you have a mind, if you will, or an energy that is so great as to be able to create a living organism that requires zillions of little points and input to function properly, then you've got a pretty smart mind. So you can't necessarily, or neither should you worry about it, comprehend that, except in concept. You know that your liver detoxifies. You know that bile builds up in a little thing called the gallbladder and extrudes a little bile to help. And if it gets out of order or plugged, it's going to hurt you and they may do surgery. Do you have to understand every working cell in the liver to live? No. But you sure want it to work right, don't you? So if it is not working right, it would behoove you to find out if it's that and see what might be done to correct whatever is perceived to be wrong. The mind knows. And this is one thing that a good therapist can help you work with. And a good chiropractor who can get you into your mind, say, all right, scan your body. Your mind knows. Get into a trance somewhere. If you have to, get someone to help you. I want to tell you those relaxation tapes are just fine. If you just order your mind, when I get into this state of relaxation and we can do this, I want to mentally scan my body and I want to know where my problems are. Well, obviously, you start where your problem hurts you. And look around. You may be surprised. It may not be the spot that hurts. You have a nervous system which will give you referred pain. You may hit a little hot button here on the right side of your right thigh, and you may get a twitch over here on the left side of your belly. Well, how interesting. Scratch it again, it itches over here. The facts are, you are not consciously aware of your own body. Why are you trying to get consciously aware of every functioning aspect of the universe? As with the television, you have to know whether it's on or off. And if it won't come on, when you turn the button on, you can say, uh-oh, I may not have power. So you start checking the possibilities. But this still isn't what is bothering you. You're curious, you want to go back, and wouldn't it be fun if we each had time to go back and do what Wes did? This was getting to be an obsession with Wes. He feels a real brotherhood down here. And he feels isolated where he is. He will not feel either isolated or nearly as much like this longing. And we talk about, oh, this wonderful group. You are rotten SOBs. Come on. Why do you go back to these spots? Because that's why you're here. Why are you called one to another? What is this charisma one for another? It's because as energy forms and energy aspects, you shared. You're not given the cotton picking privilege of running through a physical environment for 70 years and then gone. And the desire of soul is to leave a legacy worthy of God when you pass. And most of you will go right back to these aspects where you fell short. And sometimes just looking at them, you will realize you didn't fall short. It was the very thing you should have felt at the time. It maybe is what you didn't do after, or what you didn't understand, or what you refused to understand, and maybe you chose to make it a mystical experience rather than just the mystery of life and the possibilities involved. But each of these experiences get you to the point where whatever it is you have come to do, you will have the tools with which to do it. You don't even have to recognize what it was. You just have to recognize the willingness to pick up the tool and use it. And some will mistakenly throw the tool away before they've had a chance to use it, because they will be so set to not succeed that I'm going to do myself in just before I make it, so I don't have to face failure or whatever the other psychological reasons are. And don't get hung up on it. If you are functioning, you are fine. Mental problems need attention when you stop functioning. It's when you need help. The rest is fun. The rest are games. And it isn't even a game that somebody else knows and you don't. You're the only one in the game, so you know, and they don't, and they don't have to. But you are a sharing bunch of energies because you want to share. You are longing to be one in the whole, so you do want to know. You're curious. You're curious about what you were, what they are, what our relationship is, and thus and so. But you have to understand through this journey that it still doesn't matter what you were, it matters what you're doing. And what you're doing does not depend on what you were. Unless you get so sidetracked that you can't pull away from what you were and you feel you've got to haul all this karma bit around with you. Let it go. Send it off with that other turkey that you let fail. Now we talk about the experience. Ones are going to come forth and say, well, I have decided that I'm so-and-so. I was so-and-so. So how can you be so-and-so? How many times do you think this play has taken place? Infinite. You're not even through. So you're going to find that whatever lessons or things that you want to fulfill yourself with, your soul wish, you're going to find that you failed. In your own perception, at some point, you failed. Or maybe you were so successful that you feel you can now teach, now guide. Because, see, as you move through the higher dimensions, it is your responsibility to be guides for those coming up that ladder behind you. And some, in some aspects, may be way ahead of you, but on the ladder, they may be behind you. So you cannot jump to the conclusion of what big egotistical thing you might think you are. So when you confront what role you played, don't be surprised to find that many others, maybe all others, that isn't my prerogative to report, and I don't keep up with all energy forms. Just understand that many of you, maybe all of you, have played at one time or another that very role. But in each play, you will probably find that the setting, and you can only do this with talking with each other. These are the fun games. All right, let's see when we might have worked together. Let us say we've got a Simon Peter. When one energy form goes back 2,000 years ago, where are you? I'm in a room. What does it look like? And you find somebody else who is someone else, and they describe that same room. Then you know that you were probably a team in that room. And at that moment, it doesn't matter who you were before that or after that. You're in that room, and you can look around at the settings in that room, because mine never forgets. Whereas another, quote, group, in the same description of the same story, will not see the same room. It will be different. There will be something about it different. But the story is the same. It's no different than Hamlet, played by this actor or that actor or whatever. The story is the same. The setting may be a little different. The experience will be a little different. But the play is the same. And it's not fun, and it's not growth-oriented to play the same role every time you play the play. This is God energy fragmented. Because in God's space, there is no time, there is no space. There only is. But memory allows you to remember that you played a role sometime, someplace, somewhere. And you can go back and look at that. But if that becomes your life in the now, you're wasting the now. And the now is all that's going to count. So hold it in your hearts. Enjoy the game. Don't stop enjoying the game. Okay, we need to do a little business. Gene, would you catch us up, please, on the legal?
I sure will. Not
Thank
on
you.
Gene. Not on
it.
Push up everybody. There you are.
Okay. First, I want to apologize for not being here the last 2 days.
Yeah, we want to hear about that.
Well, I'll tell you, Commander, I'm trying to work my schedule so I do get down here at least 2 Sundays a month. And from what I've heard the last half hour, I'm really, really sorry I've missed a lot of this. As a matter of fact, I'm going through a regression right now with a private psychologist or psychiatrist. It is really kind of spooky for me.
Really? Because we're cheaper.
I had a very abusive father yeah, I don't need another one.
Sit down and close your eyes and let's hear.
No, I don't want to go through that again. Okay, let's see. We have, the Law Center has been really under the gun the last few days in preparing for the Rod McBroom deposition. Rod McBroom is the key bad guy in the whole John Schroffer situation. We have developed a ton of evidence against Rod McBroom, and it was essential to be able to convey that evidence to Larry Cox, our attorney. And I have done a lot of investigation, but not a lot. I've talked with 4 or 5 attorneys in Bakersfield who have told me that Larry Cox is one of the very best top trial attorneys in Bakersfield. He's a Southern gentleman from South Carolina. He has a law degree from South Carolina, and he's entitled to practice both in South Carolina and also in California. And supposedly he's much admired by the judges, and I can see why. He's a very gentlemanly sort of an individual. I met him first yesterday morning at about 8 o'clock when I was waiting for John and Audrey to show up. I made arrangements to talk with him later, and then Karen and I personally met with him from about 1:15 for a couple of hours, I believe. But it was apparent to us, and he admitted that he had not really had time to study for and prepare for the depositions. And it was apparent very quickly that he was not informed. He was not ready to go into today's deposition. And that really put the burden on Karen and myself. And I was so happy to have Karen the last couple of days because she has just been a tremendous help to me in the legal work.
Well, she was the whip master in her last life.
I believe she still is in this life. With my usual bad sense of humor, I did start things off kind of badly with the receptionist there. I introduced Karen White, and when this receptionist asked who was there to see Larry Cox, I said, you can tell him Mr. Dixon and Karen White, and I'm the pretty one.
Two mistakes.
Okie dokie. Well, we have just been informed just about a half hour ago that the deposition of Rod McBroom for tomorrow morning has been continued to May the 12th, which that gave me some freedom to come over here. Took a lot of pressure off of our backs at the Law Center. And I know John's going to be extremely disappointed. We believe the continuance was required on behalf of Rod McBroom. We're trying to verify that right now. But May the 12th happens to be a day that we had to be there anyway for the court to sign an order confirming the stipulation. What had happened is Don Gooden, the attorney for Eleanor Schroffer, had reneged on the stipulation that he had made in open court, which caused Larry Cox, John's attorney, to prepare a formal motion heard before a judge and compel the stipulation to be turned into an order. And in all my years of being connected with the law, I've never seen such a situation like this develop where you could not talk with another attorney, at least show him the record and the transcript and have him acknowledge the stipulation. Larry Cox was forced to get the transcript, forced to bring Mr. Gooden into court, and it's an embarrassing thing for Mr. Gooden, and I hope he learns a lesson from it. But he will be compelled to appear in court, acknowledge the stipulation in open court, and have it confirmed into a court order. Now, Karen came up with a real good suggestion based upon the fact that let's use these next 10 days before that hearing to subpoena all the statements and documents that they might use. I'm talking about Rod McBroom now. Rod McBroom, in his final accounting, made a lot of wild accusations of the money that they spent to support John and to make life comfortable for John while he was at Hearthstone. Things like paying Eleanor's rent each month to who? We believe to Rod McBroom. Payments to Southern Edison on behalf of John Schroffer. Well, John Schroffer didn't need any payments to Southern Edison. He was in Hearthstone. So they've really opened up a can of worms for us, and we're going to now send documents to those people, compel them to present all documentary evidence to prove every aspect of this final accounting where they're asking to be reimbursed for all the money they spent on John's behalf while John was in Hearthstone. Another position that the Law Center is taking, and we've pounded this into the heads of Mr. Falk, one of our attorneys, and Mr. Cox, is that every item that they're requesting that they be reimbursed for should be denied because John did not have Alzheimer's disease, proven by a psychiatrist, should never have been placed into an Alzheimer's home, and they not only should not be reimbursed for one penny, but they should be sued for putting him in that situation and conspiring to put him into that situation. And I'm going to talk with John Schroffer in the next few hours and tell him that we're preparing an assignment for him to assign the Law Center the cause of action to allow us to go after Eleanor, Rod, Mr. Gooden, and everybody else who put and continues to keep John Schroffer into the type of situation that he's in right now.
Good, and I'm going to tell you right this minute that you have information you don't even know the value of. And I explained, because I wanted it on the record, and I wanted you to be able to hear it, because John is beginning to recover his memory, and it will come and it will go. But I bet you, let us just watch what happens. John, how much is your house worth?
$149,000.
At least every time it's wrong, it's up. For the last 2 years, every time you asked John that question, he would tell you $40,000. In this day and age, you see. Well, he paid $40,000 to hold the house, so he remembers that in cash. And then there are other things, but that's not what I want to tell you about. You see, he is beginning to recover parts of his mind. He will say, well, I never figured out what George Green wanted me to go to Carson City for. Well, what did he ask you for? Did he ask you for money? No. Guess what? That's why they came back asking for their money out of the Institute in gold. George asked for them to get the gold to bring to him. He would haul, send to Puerto Rico or wherever. He would borrow against the gold. He would give them some stock. But he would end up with all the gold, including that in the Institute and that buried under the woodpile. So they had already started filching out the gold to turn over to George. And you're going to find, Gene, if you can get your hands on those 7 documents that were put in front of Dorma saying she had forged George Green's signature, you're going to find that some of those notes cover Eleanor's handing over gold to George Green. So it's as well you got it put off, because you just start working with John a little bit and listen to the tape, and I want John to hear the tape also. Because it's very hard to hold all these fragments, and it's taken a year now, about in July, for him to be able to recover enough to remember her coming out and hitting him over the head, number one, and probably the neighbor saw it. Because they get very nervous. And you can go in and you see, John may not remember to be able to say this, but you can help him. John said, I'm going to sue them. I'm going to get them in jail. Well, how are you going to do that? Because they hit me over the head. Well, when they start backing off on producing property, I think maybe just to say, well, John plans to bring charges against you with a grand jury hearing for attempted murder. Then it becomes on them to prove they didn't do what he remembers them doing. And if he says, I had $200,000 worth of gold in this container, an ammunition box, or silver, and it was a third or a half or three quarters or whatever fool it was, and he remembers, make those numbers high. Because they have all the documents. Make them supply the documents. So if the house is not worth, but it is, because of what he put into it, he's beginning to give you good numbers. Because he was accustomed to calculating in terms of the whole. The house is worth, say, $110,000. I have put in, you know, another $20,000 into this, whatever. I'm just using this as an example. So the mind will think either in these little bitty fragments or it will give you a big hole. But John is beginning to remember. And he knows he went up there and they didn't ask him for money. George did not want money. He wanted gold. Don't all of you understand that? And that goes right back to Overton's gold. You're going to see the pattern. So you have a case, and I'm glad that it was put off. Go on, please.
Thank you. The thing about George Green and how he buried those... he told me personally that he buried all four containers. I read his transcript at the trial, and he reversed himself and said he only buried one of the containers. But back in Austin, Texas, he told me that he had buried the four containers of gold and that he was very upset because the day that he had to dig them up, it had snowed, so he had to dig them out from under 4 feet of snow and dirt. So.
Well, isn't that where you always store someone else's gold?
I've never had that opportunity.
Unfortunately.
But it does show that he does have a fascination for gold, which brings me back to Midas and all that old history.
You're going to find that on July 4th of last year, they had an elaborate plan. Now, I don't know if you were here or not when the ones from L.A. showed up and said, oh, they'd just seen George Green the day before, and that was the reason they'd come out here. They'd been in Prater's office. George was on his way to Costa Rica. The hell he was. They had planned with son John in San Diego to go and get him out and move him, and that would be the last you would ever hear of him. He would be left out somewhere with no identification. No one would be able to identify him if they found him, or just get rid of him, period, and no one would ever be able to locate him.
This is a break where the tape is turned.
Gold coins. We are arguing over the life of a man. And this is wrong. And it will not happen. But that is exactly what they had planned to do.
Amanda, would you repeat that? Son John was mixed up in this too?
Actually, I'm not going to make that statement stick like I said it. I'm not even going to answer you. Because I don't want it coming back that some voice from outer space gave you this. Yes. Now you can just attach that to any statement made so far today. Of course he didn't understand how he was involved. This was set up and structured by Rod McBroom and Eleanor and Green, and the family is caught flapping out here in the Netherlands. But you see, the son or a relative, somebody had already signed in with those people. They were expecting somebody on the 4th of July to come and take John out. But when they showed up there, John was gone. Or was he? Maybe they took him out and he got away from them. Well, it'll behoove you to remember that they picked you up. Because when you were asked, do you know this person? You said, yes, that's my brother.
Yeah.
But the description was a person young enough that it probably would had to be the son. And I don't I'm sure that James did not have anything to do with that day, although he may have known of the plans, quote, to move John. Why would they be moving John again? They'd spirited him away practically in the middle of the night from down in Bakersfield against court orders and moved him to an unknown place where you couldn't find out, and Gene finally tracked him down. Well, when Gene then tracked him down and went in to visit him, they had to go into high gear because this meant that John was beginning to regain his memory. They had to get rid of John because the goose was going to be cooked. And then I have to get mad at everybody. And I know it seems like it's going on and on forever, but it has to go and it has to work itself out. And now you have a case. And now you can not only figure out how it worked, but you're going to find documentation that's going to back it up. Go ahead and share some more.
Thank you. Mary Snell, I'll update you on Mary Snell. Realizing the terrible position that Mary has been in and is still in, I've maintained some contact with her since the execution of her husband. And I'm happy to say that she is recovering very well, and she certainly appreciates every bit of help that she has received from everyone here. I'm very sorry that we could not have stepped into the case much, much earlier. It seemed like the trial errors happened years ago, and although she conceded the fact that she had capable attorneys that really did some really good appellate work for her, and this is one of the few persons I've ever talked with who has not blamed attorneys for all the bad fortunes that have happened afterwards, she has not followed any attorney at all. Her only complaint and grievance is that she could not have gotten more information to the law center earlier so that we could have been involved much, much earlier at a much, much earlier stage. And I'm sorry, too, because I think we could have reopened everything from the get-go if we'd been involved a year earlier. Dave Overton, I maintain contact with him because he's such a great person. He's such a great believer in everything that's happening here. And I'm happy to say that his health has improved tremendously. He's taken all of the products. He's not getting the contacts fast enough. He gripes because they don't get there fast enough. So.
Well, he could have them faster. He would have a fax machine.
He won't. He says he has no room for a fax machine.
Well, and he has backup. Rick will avow to that.
And a few weeks ago, I took some contacts up to the coffee shop up in Grass Valley that I occasionally go to. And I was pleasantly surprised when I was grabbed by one of the persons and said, this is the best stuff he's ever read. He wants to be a subscriber, so now I'm sending some contacts up that way. I understand that we're starting to, I guess he sent a subscription down here, or he's about to send it down here. Mitch, we miss Mitch very much. I thought it was a void that we would not be able to fill, but I'm happy to say that it's being filled very well. Karen has done spectacular. Paul, we've only scratched the surface with him. He's spectacular. Val, we're still learning what all she can do, and we hope to benefit greatly with Val. We're going to need a lot more help. We're buried with project after project. Ray Rennick, I talked with the secretaries for Greg Jacobson. We still have not got a final probation report. We've only heard that he was sentenced to 8 years in prison. Now, this is not all bad. We have to remember, and I vividly remember reading the number of times, the number of articles that the commander sent to him and said, Ray, don't do these things, don't do these things, don't break the law. And as a result of what he did, he was charged with attempted murder on a police officer, bombing devices, attempted murder by bomb, destructive devices. He could have probably been sent away for the rest of his full natural life. So at the very worst, from what we understand, and we're waiting for full reports on that, Ray Rennick has probably received an 8-year sentence. He will get credit for his full time served and with good time, He should probably be out within another 3 to 4 years. Part of that 8 years encompasses a probation violation that he had before this incident even happened. So that's also added on and made a part of the 8 years. I'm happy to report that the Nevada attorneys that we have been working with, and the one that drove my blood pressure up, we have replaced with better attorneys, and the substitutions are being filed. I'm also happy to report that my blood pressure is now finally going back to normal.
See, all that regression helps. You went back and you realized your problem. You've replaced your attorney, and it's working.
Yes. I'm working on my sense of humor, too, because one or two persons have complained here about my sense of humor. I regressed a little bit on this yesterday. That's when I fell down and introduced myself as the pretty one there with Karen.
And, Karen only has one man to worry about in her life, and that's Andy.
And he can handle Karen.
Maybe you guys should take lessons.
And other than that, we're just performing all of our routine duties, keeping as busy as we can be, and I'm looking forward to spending more time down here and trying to work out a schedule where I can be down here in at least two of the Sunday meetings. So it's again, it's a pleasure to be working with all you people. I love you all very much. That's about it.
We love you too.
We love you too.
And regardless of the way it may seem to you, we have needed you, and you have served well under really, really bad circumstances. And it's been a growing process for everyone involved. But you are needed, and you're going to be needed more and more and more. And we've got to get help, because burnout does happen. And yet, when you begin to feel that you're making a difference, burnout doesn't happen as quickly. So we'll get there. We'll get there. Oh, my patience is not one of your virtues, is it? Mike, share with us. I'm so appreciative that Mike has come. Because we talk about the Philippines, we talk about gold transaction, we talk about Rustbachers, and this gentleman really has paid the penalties of that relationship. And I'd just like him to be able to tell you a little bit about White Robe. I won't ask him to share anything that he's doing right now, because we do also learn that the less that we talk, which is very hard for us because we have a tendency to trust. I think that is really, truly an old Pleiadian trait. We trust everybody. Nobody would do this. We wouldn't think of doing it. Why would anybody else do it? Well, they will. And so we learn that the more important the thing is, the more private we tend to keep it once we learn our lessons. But we're always having to learn the lessons, aren't we?
Yep.
Well, I've asked him, and he will speak a little bit on this White Robe project.
Well, White Robe was a project that was all supposed to be done in such a short amount of time, and it was supposed to be an honest collection of people who were supposed to share some benefits from a gold transaction. Well, from top to bottom, the man that put the transaction together and the man who did most of the negotiations failed in his part of the deal, even from the aspect of not even getting money from his own people. So where White Robe is now, White Robe, what it stands for is a person saw a vision of a man with a white robe sit down in front of him one day, and that's how that name came about. So they put that on the top of the paper and made that the focus because they thought it was something projected to them to go ahead with that. Anyway, where it's at right now is it never existed. The paperwork all went through to the right people, and from government to government, certain folks in those governments made something happen that wasn't what White Robe was set out to be. It had to do with a gold transaction when we started, and a lot of lies were told that gold did get shipped. And gold did get shipped, but not to White Robe's thing. It got shipped to some overseas embassies, and it's still in those embassies today. And what I know about it is here's a guy in jail that ripped a lot of people off, went a little overboard in his spending habits, and made a lot of stories up about people that did or didn't exist. And $230 million changed hands between two governments. That's all I know about it at this point. So some people are out there, Mrs. Koenig and Mrs. Russbacher, they're telling one story. Some friends of mine are going to put out a book. They have files on all the White Robe. They're going to put out a book what they believe the story is. But what I'm telling you today is the story is the truth coming from this end, that there is no White Robe. And if White Robe existed, it was only on paper and nothing happened except a couple of governments changing some money in lieu of some gold credit. And nobody that did the work got paid. So as far as the U.S. government and the Treasury is concerned, there is a group of interested congressmen and what have you that are actively involved with governments trying to attain enough gold to put together a new treasury or to backdoor the treasury. And that may happen because of all the pressure of all the militias, but I'm not too privy to all the information. I just know pieces of it. I know there is a program behind the White House through a backdoor that has to do with debt relief. And that may come about because there's some powerful folks involved. And they became interested because of what this paperwork and all this noise and also the contact newspaper, the information that was put out. They got interested because of that. So that's just about all I can report that I can tell you. The militias are the ones behind getting back the treasury, though, and this government project to push them to a limit. I don't think it'll work. They don't really want any kind of trouble. But it is connected with the treasury, and it is connected with putting the country back into some monetary ability. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe we can put White Robe back in its drawer. It's just as well that there is a distraction there. You see, this particular operation came along and it didn't have anything whatsoever to do with the original program or undertaking in the Philippine area. Now, anyone who doesn't want to believe what we have to say about the Philippines and the aliens are just whistling Dixie. That's real. And there are ones who know about it. There are also totally humongous entanglements with the Marcos family and Japanese gold out of the war. Nazi gold. But there's also what I call, for your recognition, the Eldorado gold. Most of that fortune is on the continental America, or Americas. I'm not going to narrow it down more closely than that. There are some most important artifacts in several areas of the Western Hemisphere. Some in the United States, some right in this valley, or up on the hillside. And then, of course, there is the cosmic connection. And why this area? Those are not important to the White Robe operation that ended up being a ripoff.